Sports with Sandra Ezekwesili.
I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. You're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's take a look back at the elections that have been. I've got in the studio with me a guest who is not a stranger here on 99.3 Nigeria Info. He is from Connected Development. He is actually the... what's the word I'm looking for now? He is the... founder, chief executive at Connected Development. You probably know them as CODE for short, Hamzat Lawal. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me,
Sam. Let's start with what CODE does for those who are hearing about you for the first time. What do you guys do? What activities do the organization conduct during the elections?
Connected Development is Africa's living. Connected Development is Africa's leading civil society organization that empowers marginalized communities with access to information. We do this by creating platforms for informed debate between governments and our citizens. And for elections, we deployed UserBay. UserBay is a real-time situation analysis tool, deploying 20,000 observers across the 36 states and the FCT for the presidential elections and for the National Assembly elections. And then for the gubernatorial and state assembly elections, we deployed, again, 20,000 observers who were sending a real-time situation report using technology to provide information and knowledge. And for us, we were not keen about the results or who will be declared winner. We're following the process. And there were two documents that informed this deployment. One is the 2022 Electoral Act, and the second is INEC's 2023 Electoral Guideline.
What was your overall assessment of the elections?
So for the February 25th elections, it was marred with a lot of irregularity. So logistically, it was a nightmare. It was a total disaster logistically. And of course, the fact that the IRF platform did not provide real-time reports as promised by INEC and as captured in the 2023 electoral guideline. So even INEC herself did not even meet the benchmark or standard that she has set, let alone international best practices for election management and deployment. For the March 18 elections, we've seen that yes, INEC ad hoc staff came to polling units early. The BVAS worked very fine. IRF, where results were uploaded on IRF. But it was also marred with violent intimidation, harassment, and even compromise of put INEC ad hoc staff, security agencies. And you know, in every election, there are three key players: INEC, security, and political parties. And what we've seen is compromise of security agencies, unprofessional conduct of INEC officials, and interference by political parties and their agents.
Lagos, of course, you can join the conversation 0700-993-993-993-01465-7190. From your vantage point, what were the biggest shortcomings of INEC during these elections? How would you assess, I mean, you've talked about it briefly. However, how would you assess INEC's responsiveness to those problems?
So, you see, before the elections, INEC had promised the Nigerian people that one, they were going to integrate technology. And with our meeting, because every quarter, civil society have a roundtable with the INEC National Commissioners and the chairman. And they promised us that they were going to deploy technology. You know, it's going to be free, fair, credible, transparent, and accountable elections. And we have used this commitment. And the fact that we also have a 2022 Electoral Act that empowers INEC to decide which means they're going to use or which technology tools they're going to deploy, and the 2022 Electoral Act. So we've rallied our sensitization to the Nigerian people to rebuild back trust and for them to engage. If you remember, during the continual voter registration exercise, Connected Development invested heavily, and I know the media also did a lot of sensitization. We got over 4 million people as new first-time register into the INEC platform. If you also follow the collection of permanent voters card, the PVC collection, look at the collection drive, the campaigns that we invested heavily, as well as other civil society and even the media. In short, Nigerians living in diaspora flew in three times, rather, They flew in to get registered, they flew back in to get their PVC, and they flew back to cast their ballot. That's how much invested. And for the first time, INEC had public confidence, they gained public confidence, they gained public trust, and the perception around INEC was good before the presidential elections. But we went into the elections, and, you know, it was just a total disaster. You know, it was an incident that broke a lot of people's hearts, and even the trust that had been built was rolled back. Upon it, this dented their image. And you ask, how did they respond? You see, I was at the ICC coalition here in Abuja, because as the chief observer from Connected Development, I have access to the National Coalition Center at the ICC. You know, they halted coalition for a few hours, and when they resumed, you know, a lot of political parties who were aggrieved made a submission about what should happen, since the IRF platform was non-responsive. And INEC had promised that, yes, the, you know, everything was on course. You know, there was even this tension before the election if it was going to be postponed. Mind you, in 2015, in 2019, elections were postponed. So there was that tension in the country. And INEC had a last-minute emergency meeting and said no to civil society, even the international community, because we had local and international observers. The election was still going to go on. But the way that the responsiveness, now, after that crisis, INEC, who was engaging, who was responsive, who was on top of their game, they were countering fake news, misinformation, and disinformation. In short, the chairman, the National Commissioner of Information, was always jumping on one TV, one radio program. They kept mute. They were not engaging. They were not providing information or feedback. They were not even sharing knowledge of what was the situation on ground, you know? And you know, we became helpless as civil society because, you know, the Nigerian people came back to us. What's going on? We could not even offer any information, because if we want to even provide a solution, you don't even know what's on ground. So INEC was not responsive in terms of providing knowledge and information. And even the later case, when they responded, they just said, oh, you know, the platform was down because they were dealing with some person who tried to compromise the IRF platform, that's hackers. But they didn't even say, oh, what was the measure that was put in place? Mind you, the Nigerian people invested 305 billion there. 305 billion there. We're dealing with multiple recession. We're dealing with over 100 million people that are very poor. You know, we're dealing with 20 million out of school children. We're dealing with 30% unemployment rate. But we invested over 305 billion for this election. So INEC responsiveness was very poor in engaging and rebuilding trust. Yes, after the presidential election, and my statement to INEC was that they need to leverage on the March 18 election to repeat back public trust, you know. But then when you also look at the elections, yes, INEC was now on top of their game, but what happened was it was just a sieve, you know. And see, let me take you back memory lane. When you look at 2015, when you look at 2019, when you look at off-season elections, so Osun-Ekiti, when you look at the FCT council election, then 2023 election, it was just as if, okay, this election, we're doing well. Then we'll roll back. Then this one will do. So it's just a vicious cycle of, you know, we're making progress and then we're going backward 10, 15 years behind. But truth be told, when you look at election from 2003 and 2007 and even 2011, yes, we've made progress with diverse deployment. There's less overvoting. And that's why in many states where you see cancellation of results is because of overvoting. You know, what? Again. And this now, this is me now. Let's go to how does INEC, national chairman, the chairman, and particularly the resident electoral commissioner, how did they get appointed? They're appointed by the president. Yes, as constituted by the constitution, you know, or as empowered by the constitution. But if you're a partisan and then you're employing or you're appointing someone, yes, the Senate would clear them. Well, in most cases, the Senate clears them and the president sends as a nomination. Now, the resident, because see, the chairman of INEC cannot rig election. He can't. You know, he's just one person. Yes, the box up on his table and he takes the final decision as the national returning officer who declares winner. But the state resident electoral commissioners, they're more like placeholders for politicians and mischief makers, corrupt politicians. You know, they literally influence and the power tussle to get resident electoral. And you see, Sandra, if you remember when some names were sent to the Senate, civil society started a campaign that you can't put people that have partisan leaning. Some people are saying, oh, they've resigned from the party 2 years or 4 years. No, but at one point in time, they were partisan.
Right.
So you don't, every human being always take a position.
Mm-hmm.
And if the position is now geared towards partisanship, then they would have, you know, soft, as human beings, they will have soft spot for a political party that have favored them in the past. You understand?
Right.
So you cannot appoint someone at that level who has a strong political background. So you cannot get a free federal election when your resident. Why I'm focused on the resident? Because the elections at the state level were marked with irregularities. And it is the resident electoral commissioner that has that level of power and influence to manipulate the process and the system. So I think going forward, as Nigerians, and when we get the 10th National Assembly constituted, the first thing is to look at how many people get appointed. You know, we must make
What changes would you recommend? What changes would you recommend for the appointment of RECs and the selection of returning officers?
That people that get appointed into this office must be neutral. And that the Nigerian police and the DSS do a thorough background check.
Okay.
And flag these issues. But
hear me.
Returning officer.
Yes.
Okay,
so before we get to that, since you yourself have just said that human beings are probably unable to be neutral about politics, would it not be better if we had perhaps co-recs, you know, that are from some of the major political parties? That way, each person is cancelling out the other one. Could that be something that works going forward instead of someone that the police? Because we know the police and the security agents we have, they will come out and tell you, oh, we've done background checks. But you can't background check inside someone's mind and inside someone's biases. There are no machines yet that tells you for sure this is how this person is leaning politically. You know, you can only hazard a guess, but you could be wrong. Is it wishful thinking to say that we could find neutral RECs? Is it wishful thinking, considering what has happened in this country, election after election, since at least 1999?
So it's not wishful thinking, it's possible. So, Sandra, I see, I've observed the election in the United States of America. I've observed the election in Kenya. Later this year, we'll go to we'll be in Liberia to observe the presidential election. Sandra, in a country where there are no consequences, this would happen. Even if you bring someone that is neutral, and then the person knows that, see, if I collude with corrupt politicians and interfere in the process, nothing would happen to me. Then they would collude. Because our values now, sadly, is about material wealth. Where corrupt people offer bribes to induce people in authority. And we've seen this play hand. So if we have a society, Sandra, that there are no consequences for action or inaction, people would always turn. So when you have a society in America, as an electoral officer, you commit an electoral offense, the law will come after you. What I had even thought, Sandra, was after the presidential election, they would constitute an independent committee or panel where you have the Nigerian Bar Association, you have civil society, you have anti-corruption agency, you have law enforcement agency, you have political party representative under the IPAC platform to investigate what transpired. And if anyone is found wanting, even by now, I had even thought maybe, you know, the law enforcement agency would have arrested or even invited some people for interrogation who played key role that marred the outcome of this election or that put, you know, the integrity of the process to question. This is what I had thought. Because in a country that works, you don't need anyone to give you directive if you're a law enforcement officer. You have operational manual and guideline. Use it to protect the interests of the country. We're talking about our country because our country must come first. When we talk about patriotism, mind you, whoever is appointed is given an opportunity to serve. It is a commitment you've made. You read your oath of office, making a commitment to serve the Nigerian people, the interest of the country, not the interest of individuals or group of people. Now, direct, Sandra, direct.
No,
rather returning officers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have recs and we have returning officers.
Mm-hmm.
We have professors, university professors who are returning officers. What skill, knowledge, or capacity do they have on electoral management? Sandra, this is not I have ultimate respect for them, but you're talking about electoral management. Having a PhD or being a professor in university does not cut it. It doesn't cut it. So, and I think we need to look at what criteria are we setting that would now put in place to get someone to be appointed as an electoral returning officer. Electoral management, not be being so, heavy logistics. You're dealing with data, you're dealing with numbers, you're dealing with people, you're dealing with a coalition of results, from both polling unit to local government to ward. So again, we need to look at how we appoint these people into office.
I like that you mentioned the United States. In the US, and that's why I said this thing, in the US, electoral officers are not expected to be neutral. Instead, they run an adversarial system where the two major political parties each select an equal number of electoral officers at local level. That way, each point where the electoral body is making decisions, both parties are represented. So isn't the problem in Nigeria that we keep assuming neutrality and letting the government pick officials who we all pretend are neutral? Couldn't the adversarial system help us?
Yeah, it could help us. And you see, again, America, as much as they're picking two people representing the party, you cannot interfere. You cannot manipulate, because if you're caught, even see now they're bringing indictment to a former president.
That's right.
Have I ever investigated any former president in Nigeria for any act of corruption or abuse of power? Let's cover it up. So again, it's also about what I have said, consequences. Let the rule of law prevail. Let law enforcement agency do their job. So that these politicians, when they know that there are consequences, even if you're a very rich, powerful politician, the law would take its course. Then people, there will be less impunity and less people interfering with the process and the system.
Lagos, join the conversation. 0700-993-993-993-01465-7190. We're taking a look back at the elections that have been. We went to vote on Saturday. Some of us couldn't vote because we were beating up and sent away from our polling units. Some of us were able to vote without event, without drama. We have tried to vote for the second time. The first time was February 25th, 3 weeks ago. Hamzat Lawal and I are taking a look back at the elections that have been. Hamzat is the founder and chief executive at Connected Development Code. 99.3. Hello. Hello.
Hello, Sandra. Good evening.
Good evening. What's your name, sir?
How are you? This is Innocent.
Good to have you on the show, Innocent. Talk to me.
Thank you very much. I'm from Ikoto.
Welcome.
I'm from Ikoto, Ebwe.
Okay, welcome. Talk to me.
Your guest there, the man with you there, whether he's talking on the line or he's with you, but Nigerians as a person does not respect law.
Okay.
We have a constitution. I'm a lawyer.
Okay.
Constitution. None of them respect that constitution. I voted. When I voted, I went back to my house. Then waiting for the report or result of the what I voted for. I'm not the one to count it. The law is there abiding with every one of us. They don't know what anybody that died in the election, dying on his own, because the person he wants to do more, much expected to do. Election, I was a principal of the school for 8 years, a principal, secondary and the secondary primary nursery. For good 8 years, there was no riot in that school. Anek is a person, an individual. The chairman is an individual. He has people he appointed in different offices, different categories, place to do. Nigeria does not respect those people.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. We've got a message here from Peter Yorinde in Anthony. And Peter says, I'm a mid-level official in the family party and I've worked in the top level. I cannot believe what I noticed in this election. I want the APC people to know that they've created a high level of disregard towards themselves. I doubt a single tout or brigand was jobless. They were all engaged in that last political season. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back from this break, we'll keep talking to Hamzat Lawal. Lagos, I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. You're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. We've got the founder of Connected Development on the show with us, Hamzat Lawal. We're taking a look back at the elections that we have had. Hamzat, one complaint that the public and the press had after the presidential election was that INEC did not give a clear, unified and satisfying answer for what went wrong with IREV. The official press statement, like you mentioned, and when we were talking before the break, was a glitch. INEC also mentioned overload from traffic. But I heard from a bunch of IT experts who said, nah, you don't know what you're talking about, INEC. And INEC never really responded to that pushback from IT experts. What do you think INEC could or should have done differently in terms of comms during that crisis?
I think that they shouldn't have kept quiet, because at that time the country was tense. There was tension, there was apprehension, there was uncertainty, because it was just as if an individual and an institution was holding us to ransom, because there's a lot of interest. You know, the United States of America Secretary of State said, because Nigeria matters, we actually matter, not only to ourselves, but to the world. So at that point, you know, you can't afford to keep quiet, because that long silence and tension gave mischief maker, fake news, misinformation merchants to spread falsehood that brought disunity. So again, and I think that in the spirit of transparency and accountability, and I hope with time, we can have a public inquiry. You know, when the National Assembly, you know, sits, they should invite the chairman to give an account and answer this very second questions. I saw on social media where it's a good text, but we're even showing heat map of hack on those days and time that the chairman claimed that there was some interference. But, you know, it wasn't tallying. You know, Nigerian young people are very sophisticated and the interest is there for a better country. So, but I think they shouldn't have kept quiet. What it also means is they didn't have a crisis management plan in place.
Mm.
You know, they didn't have an alternative plan or a crisis management plan in place in terms of crisis communication and contingency plan around, you know, different scenarios.
Mm.
You know, for someone like me, I lead an organization, I always plan scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
During the election, one of my observers was beat up. Blood literally started coming out from her eye, too, actually. Because we had plan and we built that scenario, we're able to respond, we're able to provide support, reach out, provide help, and ensure that these people are able to get needed attention at that critical time, you know?
Mm.
So what it means is they didn't have contingency plan, no crisis management plans.
Let's talk about the violence. You just mentioned now that you had your people beat up where they went to observe elections. We had journalists be beat up here in Lagos. Mm-hmm. We had ethnic targeting. We had voters be flogged. Did you know how dehumanizing it is to have voters be caned? You know, you had voters be beaten up. We had a few people who have died as a result of simply trying to vote. How would you
22 and counting officially 22 and counting.
How would you score the responsiveness of the security agents?
See, that's why when I say I think there's a collusion here, because see, first there was that heated policy just a few days even before the election were postponed to March 18th. Mm-hmm. Then the tension dials down. But then 48 hours into March 18th, they were inciting statements. They were ethnic profiling, which is sad. And when I even listened to the response of spokespersons of the law enforcement agency, you know, I was ashamed of my country, myself, and even those institutions who became mouthpiece of people who made this statement and say, oh, it's a joke. No, you don't joke. You don't joke with statements like that, particularly during an election, a political period. You don't make statements like that, you know? Sandra, I remember you and I went for a conference in Ottawa, and what we're talking about is national cohesion, peace and national cohesion, you know, respecting diversity. And then before election, people are making this kind of statement that would consume all of us. Because if anything go wrong, Sandra, you and I, we're not safe.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in Abuja, you're in Lagos, and you're in Lekki or VI. You know, I'm in Abuja, you're close to the seat of power. We're not safe. It will literally consume all of us.
That's
each and every one of us, we're connected to each other. If not for the relationship you and I have kept for many, many years. You know, and this world, we need each other. And it is relationship that would elevate you. It is people that would support you to grow. I was really heartbroken that we'll now become so little that we're talking about region, religion, ethnicity, tribe. Come on, 2023, 21st century, where people are talking about artificial intelligence, they're talking about going to space, we're talking about tribe and religion, ethnicity, profiling people, dehumanizing people, attacking people because of election. And so this also tells you that our politics is not about service. It's about control. It's about state capture. Because if it's about service, if people say they don't want you, then you peacefully go back and do something that you're good at. But the politicians are jobless people. They don't have anything to fall back to. No skills, no capacity,
no ideas. Politics is their job.
Well, their job is to serve. Politics is meant to serve the people that have elected you and given you their mandate. So it's not a do or die affair. Because they've seen, see, Sandra, a society that politicians are richer than entrepreneurs, a society that will never grow. Obama, is he the richest man on earth? No, he just recently even paid back his university loan, education loan.
That's right.
So if you have politicians that are rich, have entrepreneurs that are poor, then tell me what kind of policy that country would give you. So continue to make the politicians richer and continue to kill businesses and ideas that are supposed to strive and bring about solutions. So I imagine problem.
Now, on the flip side, what were some of the things you feel that INEC got right?
Oh, yeah. So when you look at the fact that they integrated technology, BVAS helped check overvoting. That's a game changer. If you also look at March 18 election, they got to polling unit very early. In short, I myself traveled the night before the election. I went to Nasarawa, Plateau, Kaduna, Niger, and I slept in Kogi. I was at the polling, my polling booth in Okene local government, Opogoro Deku ward in Kogi state, around 8 a.m. I witnessed when the officials came, they set up, and by 8:30 a.m., in short, I was part of the first set of people that got accredited. You know, the first presidential election, the BVAS, there were so many failures. You know, we witnessed and recorded so many. But this time around, the way, you know, it was very proactive. It took me less than 2 seconds to get accredited. The entire process took me less than 30 seconds to cast my ballot and leave the polling unit. So before I traveled down back to Abuja to my situation room and give my midday reports with the briefing the journalist. So that's a positive event. You know, I witnessed where they retrained the ad hoc staff. I was even briefed by the Kogi State Resident Electoral Commissioner and the PRO. So we've seen some level of positive event. And just when coalition is going, you see the case of Enugu, where the national headquarters rose to the occasion and ensured that nobody interferes and try to steal the mandate of the people. I think it's two states in the south. It's Enugu, I can't remember the second state. I don't want to call the wrong state. So you see they were proactive to engage and ensure that, you know, the recs are put in check. And of course, even after the election, they suspended two recs. I think one in Sokoto, I can't remember the second state. So again, these are proactive steps and these are some positive, you know, step to rebuild back and redeem their battered image.
I want to come back to the security point you were making, right? How much of the problem was down to security agents being overstretched? And how much of it was down to them choosing not to do their jobs for whatever reason? Because I know you mentioned collusion earlier on, but what if it's simply that they were overstretched?
No. So before the election, the IG of police have come and say, oh, you know, we're deploying manpower. We have this covered. We're going to protect lives and property. They give public confidence around this. Even civil defense commanders, all of them, they're saying, even the army mobilized. Mm. And I must commend the army. I think without the interference of the army or without the involvement of the army, this crisis would have escalated, you know, beyond this. Mm. And why I say they colluded? In every polling unit, to be fair, there are two security agents unarmed. You know, but the armed one are supposed to provide perimeter security to respond to any intended crisis or any interference by politicians or thugs or hoodlums. But for anyone to attack a polling unit, you must mobilize. Hmm. You must travel.
Hmm.
Is it that they didn't see a group of people? Because if you watch the video of when you saw the political talk come and destroy electoral material.
Mm-hmm.
They come in group.
Right.
How did they penetrate that perimeter security? Now, how did they leave? Because I know in some cases we escalate.
Mm-hmm.
So how did they leave without any arrest?
Mm-hmm.
Or without any... So you understand? So mm-hmm. it begs for many answers.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, it is the army that would even mobilize and respond.
Mm-hmm.
And then you now ask, where are the police? Where are the armed police officers and other security agencies? So again, they didn't do well in terms of guaranteeing the protection of life and property. And that's why you had voter apathy. Because if you look at, yes, the February 25th election, it also contributed to the impact of the outcome of the March 18th election. Yes, our security agencies are overstretched. There was a rumor that even some of them haven't gotten their electoral allowances for the security deployments. Again, it tells you about the rot in society. See, I say society, not because every society right now, the only value that connects everybody is acquiring wealth.
Mm.
Sadly, there are no values.
All right, let's take a look at messages we have on WhatsApp. We have quite a lot of them. Lagos, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call on 0700-993-993-993. That's for men. Women, call us on 01465-7190. Yes, we got that message from Peter, Yorin, Dane, Anthony. I didn't finish reading it before the first break. However, Peter says, Madam Sandra, I'm a mid-level official in the family party and I've worked in the top level. I cannot believe what I noticed in this election. I want APC to know that they have created a higher level of hatred towards themselves. I doubt a single tout or brigand was jobless. They were all engaged in the last election. As a party official, I witnessed and monitored 1.5 local governments, K2, Mile 12, Amagodo, and other areas of Koshofe Constituency 2. It had criminals and thugs threatening non-indigenous communities, opposition supporters, and where counting was going against their paymasters during post-voting counting, stages of the electoral exercise. In addition, there were open sharing of US dollars at collation centers at 2 ward levels and at the higher collation centers, of which I don't have physical evidence. Party agents of opposition parties were either threatened to conform with their manipulation or face death. I have a lot to say and disclose. I've not even started by mentioning TPEX or correction fluid ECA8A results. I've noticed many discrepancies at different stages. New methods of rigging have sprung up. Please, my party needs help. We can get to challenge many, many results. However, I wish to know what is the legal outcome if a party agent doesn't sign either the EC8A, EC8B, or EC8E, or EC40G series. I didn't sign the governorship results at LG level, and I have record of the LG returning officer saying that if I don't sign, my EC8 document will not be admissible in court if my family party contests it. Hamzat Lawal, do you have an answer for my guest? Now, Hamzat doesn't work for INEC and he's not a lawyer, but perhaps he has an answer for Peter Yorinde. Do you, Hamzat?
I know that the political parties and the legal team are putting together evidence and petition to the tribunal. So I will let the law take its course for its relation. It's really a shame.
Mm.
And I hope you can also put together your report and submit to, you know, your principals in INEC, and hope that this result will be escalated and justice will be served.
Hmm. Okay. I've got more messages on WhatsApp. Dennis from Ikorodu says, I believe if civil society and security agencies are set up to monitor and penalize electoral offenders with a total suspension of a political party in a state where thuggery is so much, the other states may sit up. Do you think this could work, Hamzat?
Sorry, what's the question?
The person says, I believe, Dennis from Ikorodu says, I believe if civil society and security agencies were to set up and monitor and penalize electoral offenders with total suspension of a political party in a state where thuggery is a lot, the other states may sit up.
Well, you see, civil society have limitations. You know, even Serap would take you to court and then allow the judicial process. And she's, we're not government, and we cannot take the role of government or play government. Both civil society, we're supposed to hold them to account, you know, provide solution and checkmates them. But, you know, we have limitation. But law enforcement, they're empowered by law and taxpayers' money. So maybe we would get to a point where government would recognize the role of civil society and engage them. Because before you also undertake some assignment, you must get constitutional backing at civil society.
Okay, let's come to the phone lines now, where we have a few people trying to join. 99.3.
Hello, Sandra. Good evening.
Good evening. What's your name, ma'am?
My name is Angela.
Welcome, Angela. Talk to me.
Okay, please. My experience on Saturday. Well, I live in Ejigbo.
Okay.
I was transferred to a new polling unit.
Okay.
So from my house to my new polling unit, I will pass like four polling units before I get to my own.
Okay.
The same thing that happened in my polling unit happened in all these four polling units. In the morning, talks came, harassed people that if you're not voting for APC, you should leave. You know, people got scared and moved. They allowed the other officers to stay behind and, you know, allow their people to vote. At the time, other people started voting, and I voted. I voted and went to stay at a corner to watch. Maybe you wait for the counting. Those talks, they are just passing because there are three polling units on that street where my new polling unit is. They are passing with bikes to and fro, carrying canes. Just like about 1 hour after I voted, they came back, mandated all that the INEC officers to pack their load, stop collecting, and carry the bus along with them. They ordered the INEC officers to carry the bus and follow them. So counting did not take place. And the same thing happened to all other polling units in that axis. What I want to know now, if I see my polling union result on IRF, what does it imply?
What does it imply?
Even my husband's polling unit, his own is far, his own is at Bokono. He came back earlier and narrated the same story. I also have a friend, the same story. So we, in all these in Ejigbo, almost every polling unit was attacked. So what if we see our result on IRF? What does it stand?
All right. Thank you very much for calling. We'll take a very short break. When we come back, I'll quickly get Hamzat's thoughts on that, and then we'll call it a wrap. You're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
No, like, AMC is not free up here. Nigeria mentality. It's about finding happiness in your home. Look where
you're your number one station for talk. Let's talk.
Do you wish to be a distributor for an American company? Do you wish to earn more than you're being paid? Kirby Nigeria is offering a role in your company. To be part of their distributors, you need a personal car and a valid driver's license to fitting for the job. You can call 0815-705-0505. That is 0815-705-0505 or 0905-637-4258. Again, 0905-637-4258 for more information.
This is an infomercial.
All right, Hamzat, she says, what does it mean if I get on IREV and I find a result for my polling unit where we did not vote? You've got 30 seconds.
Well, even during the presidential elections, you know, there are some House of Rep members that were declared winners, and in some of the local governments, they didn't vote, and there were results that were declared. One case was in Imo State in particular. So when this happened, if the candidate have a strong case, this could be upturned, or if the results were declared under duress by the returning officers and the petition, then this can also be upturned. But, you know, we need to take all of this evidence through the judicial process, which is the electoral tribunal.
All right. Hamzat Lawal is the founder and chief executive officer of Connected Development. Thank you so much, Hamzat Lawal, for joining me on the show today.
Thank you, Sandra. Call me. So don't go to be reaching out only when you want me. You're my friend.
Oh yeah, sorry. I will call you.
Bye.
Take care. Lagos will take a break. When we come back, I'll hand you over to the newsroom for the newsroom. However, that's all the time I have on today's show. Tomorrow we'll have Ruth Okorocha and Ramadan Oladipo debate in the Tournament of Champions. I'm S. Ezekwesili on social media.